But the reason why we are all here tonight is to welcome a very special guest from out of town who used to live here. And I'd like to introduce tonight our main speaker for this evening, Richard G.
Somebody took my water.
I'm
Richard G and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Where are we going? You know, that's what recovery does to you, give you a little smart ass attitude. So it's real quiet and humble when you got in here. You know, it was a real honor and privilege to see Betty, Natalie, Bree, and I forgot your name, Pat, to get your birthdays. I see Natalie struggle through the year, especially early on. And how do you tell somebody to hang in there, that this is part of the process, and, you know, it's your turn, this is the way it is, but it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And Bree, I still remember. I remember on Broadway, just a young girl, just a little baby, coming in, sitting down. Her and Julie, those I remember them too. They stuck together and they kept coming. They kept coming. They kept coming. And I didn't know you had 29 years though. Shit. Follow direction, you'll be there too, right? And so it's a great honor to witness that today. It really is. And Natalie, I mean it. You know, I've seen you, and the car breaking down, and you just, what the fuck, you know? And what the fuck else can, you know? And you, what do you tell everybody? What do you tell somebody? You gotta hang. You gotta hang. And because you do, you persevere. To persevere is to succeed, you know? And, you know, sometimes my sobriety's been very high, and that sucker has been very low. But it's never been compared to anything that was out in the street. You know, one thing about my sobriety is that I've always had hope. You know, there's always been hope. And today, you know, I've been sober since October 6, 1987. And you know, when I say that, it's like, whoa, man, it's a long time, you know. I remember when Daryl and I were the youngsters, and now we're the old men, you know. And that could be funny to you, but you know what? We never thought we would get to this age, right? I thought that I would be dead around 22 years old, and I welcomed and accepted that fact, you know. And thank you, God, for seeing differently, you know. And today when I share, I don't like to share or participate in any hostility. If I say anything that you may misinterpret as offensive, come talk to me. Ask me after the meeting what exactly I meant. You know, if I say something that maybe you don't agree with, hey, come to me after the meeting. But heed warning. My beliefs are deep-rooted. And if you come at me from the fucking side neck, it's not going to be a very good encounter. Because I believe in what I believe. And what I believe is because of what I've been through in trial and error in my recovery. You know, people have asked me, how do I know what I know? And I've told them, do as I do, and you'll know what I know. But be very careful, because not too many people have stayed sober behind what I've done. I say that because I've done probably 96% of what I did out in the streets, I've done in sobriety. I grew up in recovery. The onion was thick, the crust was thick, and I didn't actually start working on my character defects until maybe I had 8 years, because I didn't give a fuck. Honestly, I knew the consequences. Fuck it. I was willing to pay him. And I did. And as time went on, they got harsher and harsher. A lot of times we talk about step seven, and we overlook that little bitty word called humbly. See, we didn't say, hey, this drink is getting a little out of hand, man. I'm going to shoot over the head, see what they got. It's when we were humbled, knocked to the end of the dirt, that we became humbled to be willing to listen to somebody other than ourselves, just for that moment. Some say you don't kick somebody when they're down. The book says that's exactly when you kick them. Because that's when they're willing and able to hear you. You see? All my growing pains have been real harsh. Real harsh. And what's up, dog? What's up, bro? Good to see you. And I got to say this. If they had been any less harsh, Richard wouldn't even looked. I wouldn't have even looked that way. That's the honest God truth. A lot of people have paid the cost for me being here. Man, that hit a nerve. A lot of people have paid the cost for me being here. You know, I was flattered yesterday. Somebody says, my name is so-and-so, and I was told that you're one that you don't want to miss sharing. Okay, I'm flattered with all that, but I ain't nobody. And I've never pretended to be anybody. I don't belong on no pedestal. I don't even belong on the top of the curb. But I walk with dignity and I walk with my integrity. And sometimes it's compromised, but I walk nonetheless. You know, when I came in here, like I said, I grew up in AA. I used to come here and come here and come here. And I used to sit in the back over there. Nobody came up and offered me their number. They didn't. I wasn't approachable back then. I'm not trying to be hard-ass, but I wasn't. And I was hard. But I kept coming. And I kept coming. And I kept coming. And as I kept coming, I remember one time I came and I got a cup of coffee and I started walking. I was going to sit over here in this chair over here, and I started walking this. It was, hey, Richard.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Richard.
Hi.
Hey, Rich. Hi. Richard, hi.
Hey, hi.
Richard, hey, hi, hi. Richard, hi.
Hi.
And then I got over here, and I was right there. I said, damn, I know a lot of motherfucking people around here now, man. You know? And I sat down. And there was this one white guy, his name was Don, he was Dorothy's husband. And I used to remember thinking, how come this white motherfucker want to talk to me all the time? I couldn't get it. But every minute he'd come and he'd talk to me and say, hey, Richard. And I said, man, I was baffled, man. I was like, what the fuck? Why is this man talking to me? You know, but see, I come from the streets. It's like, you say hi. It's like, what do you mean hi? Fuck off me, hi. I don't trust nobody, right? And all it is they were nice. I remember Barbara Castleman, Dwight, Alan. Old man Al used to get a cup of water. By the time he got over here to sit down, half of it be spilled out. Gordon, Betty, Jenny, Carl, Barry, Rosa, Dorothy, Peggy. I hope today, you know, when I got 25 years, I got on my bike and I rode down the freeway and I had tears coming. And I thanked every one of them. Every one of them. And I thought, I said, I hope you're proud of what you've given me, that I've given back. I hope I fulfilled your expectations. And thank you for loving me until I could find my way. Thank you for showing me the way. Smokey. Smokey was the one man I've never heard no one ever say a bad word ever towards that man. I am so grateful that I came in when I came in. Carl. Darren and I, we were like little two teenagers, man. We used to fuck with Carl. And then one time I got in a bad space, right? And Carl's voice came to me. I never fuck with Carl no more. When I used to come in, I used to go to the down that end of the table, and I used to shake every one of their hands. All the way up. Every one of them shook every one of their hands. Out of respect. Out of respect. There was something here that I couldn't put my finger on, but I knew that there was something here, and I kept coming. And one thing I can say that is I came on time and I raised my hand as a newcomer. That's one thing I can say. People accuse me of coming in here loaded. That's untrue. I never came in here loaded because to me, this was sacred ground. I just sit right there, raise my hand. And I remember the first time I got 30 days, everybody went like that to look back. I said, what the fuck you looking at? I remember one time I walked through the door and Pete, he was a greeter. And he went to shake my hand, give me a hug. I said, man, get the fuck off me. What are you doing? So I'm a greeter. Greeter, get out of here. And I walked up over here and sat right here. Now me and Al were sitting right there. I said, look at that stupid motherfucker, huh? What the fuck he doing? He's greeting. What's greeting? So why would he do that? It's because I made him. And I looked it out and I said, you made him do that? And he goes, yeah. Well, how come you never made me do that? So, well, I thought about it. But I figured we'd probably be visiting somebody at Marion Hospital, so I thought probably not a good idea. Then I remember one time, I had 2.5 years, people, 2.5 years. Sitting up here again with Elle. And this woman's up here, and she's talking about emotions. What the fuck she talking about? So I look at Elle, and I go, hey, Elle. What's emotions, man? Is that like feelings or something? He turns to me, and he goes, yes. You're about to get in touch with yours. Flew right over my head. Whatever. I call them UFOs today. There was a whole lot of UFOs in the beginning, man. I got 30 years. October will be 31, and I'm starting to see exactly what was meant. You know? I have two sponsors, Robert D. and L. I used Robert when L was going through the his death of his first wife, Sarah. And then through the years, when he was busy, I just went to Robert. And Robert and I have been close, and L moved down south, and so I have two. And it's worked out well for me. Worked out well. I feel privileged that I've found two men that I have the utmost respect for and that I can go to with anything and feel unjudged. I have some friends that are like that too. Daryl, Long, Jim M, Ricky. There's some of you here, Ray. Go back a long way with Ray. Raymond, I saw Raymond on Lincoln Street one time, man, when I first seen him. I'm going down the street, right, and I'm thinking, This fucking duck. So I shoot past him, right? And then all of a sudden, that little voice said, "Where would you be if Roger did that to you?" My face almost hit the windshield, right? And I said, "Okay, God. But if he gives me any bullshit, I'm fucking out of here." So I backed up and I said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And then I saw that look. That look you can't fake. That look you see in the eye. And he said, "Not good." And I pulled off. 23 years today. 23 years. I've helped a lot of people. Ricky. Hated Ricky. Ricky hated me then more than I hated Ricky. And we used to play a lot of clean and sober softball back then. And I remember we had a team and had got a bunch of pizza. And I told Ricky, Ricky came up out of nowhere. He started eating my pizza. And I was like, "What's this motherfucker doing?" And so I look at him, I said, "You take one more motherfucking piece of pizza, I'm going to go fuck him up." So then he comes up to me, he goes, "Richard, you got a minute?" "Yeah, I got a minute." "What?" He goes, "Well, I was hoping if you would have a minute." "Yeah, I got a minute." "What?" So he goes, I was wondering if he would sponsor me. That kicked me in the gut, man. I remember like it actually felt like it got kicked in the gut. And I told everybody to leave. And I stood there with Ricky and we talked. Ricky and Lawson went out one time. And I had this picture of them on my drawer, my dresser. Years started to go by, and every time I'd get that picture, I'd go to put it in the drawer, put it away. Another two brothers down. Had to accept that. But every time I put that picture in the drawer, something made it come back, and I put it back up on top. And I thought, some odd reason, that if I kept it up on the dresser, somehow they'd come back. And they did. And I thank God for that. I have a lot of good friends in here. People, if they go out, it would hurt. Daryl, one time when he got married and he was in despair, man, and he says, "I don't know what to do." And I yelled at him, "Don't tell me that. You know what the fuck to do. Now do it." It was more out of being full of fear of losing him than anything, because I'd become too attached to him. Like my own brother. So it was, "Don't tell me that shit. Stand the fuck up and move." And you know, I'm going to tell you, I could come up here and I could quote the book, talk about the steps. A lot of times why I don't really like to come up here and do this anymore, I'm in service a lot. And I'd rather do it from the side, behind the scenes. Because when I come up here, when somebody starts quoting the book, and they start talking about all these little cliches, I get turned off. Because you're not showing me, you're not sharing you with me. You're giving me verbiage. I don't need fucking verbiage. I need one alcoholic sharing to another alcoholic, heart to heart. Language of the heart. Or get off. Get away from me, man. You're wasting my time. You see? Get real. Or get off. You see? This thing is nothing other than life and death. I've never lost sight of that. I have never lost sight that this is a matter of life and death. That's why Daryl and I and others take it so serious as we do. Because, yeah, it's all great, and yeah, it's all a lot of fun, and yeah, socializing, and yeah, we can have a lot of fun in here. But the bottom line is, it's life and death, baby. If you apply it, it works, and if you don't apply it, it doesn't work. It's that simple. It's really that simple. So I'm sharing you me right now. I'm sharing you me right now. Last night I heard a speaker and he got too caught up in the cliches and he started talking about, I hugged a teddy bear. You know what I thought? Bitch. Somebody come up here and say, I'm hugging a teddy bear. You really believe I'm going to say, that's what I want? Fuck no. What I want is not to feel like a loser. What I want is not to have my fear overwhelm me to where I'm feeling like a little bitch. I've always had the heart and the soul of a soldier, a warrior. Alcohol and drugs takes that away. Alcoholics Anonymous has restored that. I've always been one. I may not win, but if I'm going down swinging and I can wake up in the morning and say I gave it my best shot, fuck it. That's all that really matters. And where do I get my strength? God. You know, a lot of people say, well, he's not too spiritual. All that time he's got. And you know, he cusses a lot. You know, for all you spiritual... Let me tell you something about Richard. I work in the corporate world. Huh? Believe it or not. I work for the second largest petroleum corporation in the world. I am an inspector. I worked hard. I sacrificed a lot to get to where I'm at. That is including having to travel and leave my family, provided they were taken care of. But I had to leave my family. Had to be alone throughout the United States long periods of time. No meetings. No contact. I sacrificed. I worked hard to get where I'm at. And the street mentality still resides in Richard. And it's hindered me, but it's also helped me. My mentor in recovery, in inspection told me, whatever you do, do not lose your composure. If you're going to lose your composure, leave the room. I've been able to 30-some years maintain my composure. Last year, this guy came at me at the right angle. And the street came out in a morning meeting with everybody there. And everybody got scared. When I caught it, it was too late. It had already come out. And my supervisor and another guy who comes from where I come from said, whoa, 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 easy, Holmes, easy, easy. And it was too late. It came out already. I had to back up. All I'm trying to say is that Richard is still in here. I'm not cured by no means. By no means whatsoever. You know. I want to read something out of here is that... We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear
and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commenced to outgrow our fear.
Fear, I hate fear. And about a year and a half ago, I had this dilemma of how to reach people in a way where I could talk about God but not offend anybody. Okay? And it's not because I was afraid of or ashamed of talking about my God, because I could care less. My God loves you whether you believe in him or not. All you need to do is turn to him and he will be there. It says God could and would if he were sought. Once you seek him, you found him now. Now you got to just let the road unfold before you. That's all you got to do now. But I was in this dilemma about how can I talk about God and not offend anybody? Only because I just wanted to be able to reach that much of a broader spectrum. Because I know what this is about. I know that if you cuss God don't care. He understands your hurt. But then I ran into this guy, man. His name was John. And John came up. I was at a meeting. And John's come up to me and said, "Hey, Richard, let me get your number, man. I want you to share for me." I said, "All right." And so he opens up his phone and he goes, "Hey, is this it?" And I go, "Yeah, that's it." He goes, "Hey, man, check this out. FX. You know what that means?" And I was like, "No, I don't." He goes, "Hey, man. First time I ever heard you share, you said, if you got a problem with God, you better fix that motherfucker because he's not the problem." And that holds true. I understand the distortion. I understand the hurt. But I believe God is the key. I believe God is the key. Like I said to all you spiritual gurus, one of the most complimentary comments that's been given to me is that, "Richard, you know why I asked you to sponsor me? Because as long as I've known you, you've never not sought God. I'm always seeking God. I'm always seeking God. God is my strength. Without God, I have no strength. You guys have shown me a blueprint on how to get from self-will into God's will. I fear my God. I do. Because I know how it is to be not in God alignment. And so do you. You want to do self-will? You know where that goes. We have an outline here to get us into God's will, in alignment. That's my purpose today. And if I can help anybody, anytime, anywhere, any place, anyhow, I will do so. You know, I was asked when I was asked to share for this meeting, I was also asked to share for another meeting that's a big meeting. And I said, "Well, I appreciate that, but I was asked to share at this meeting." I said, "Well, if you choose this meeting, then we'll just maybe shine out for another time." There's no way I'm going to overlook this meeting. This is where it started, right here. When I got into recovery, this building was open 24/7. I used to come and sit right here, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, alone, and just look around and feel the vibes, see the faces, and it would give me enough faith and courage to go through the night. I used to come in here and hear all these different characters come in. I remember Vic, the little old man, Vic and Dottie. Who remembers Vic and Dottie? Vic had like, you ever see the bottom of Coke bottles? That's how his glasses were, right? And one time I shared, and I'm walking out the meeting, and I feel this little tap on my back, right? And "Hey, what's up, Vic?" He goes, "Richard, have you done a fourth yet?" And I said, "Well, actually, Vic, I'm on it now." "That's good." says, you know, Rich, it's kind of hard to live in the present when you're living in the past. Little angels like that. I remember when I did my fourth step, I was having problems with it. Al said 2 weeks. Shit you not. When 2 weeks was done, I was at his door knocking. 2 weeks is up, Al. What's next? When we got to the fourth, which I heard before. But I came to the meeting, and Al was getting a 17-year cake. And I was in the back over there. And I told him I was having problems with my fourth. And he said, well, we'll talk after the meeting. Al stood up here, and I shit you not, Al came out like 3D. And everybody like, whoo. And this little voice said, if you want what he has, you must do what he did. The fourth step is part of what he did. And right then and there, I knew I had it. I knew. So Al came up after and he says, hey, when you guys says, okay, but I got this. I got it. I went home the next day and I said, God, give me the ability to write what I must write. And all of a sudden it was like the hatch blew open. It went, and all this shit started coming up, man. All this shit started coming up. And tears were just rolling down my face, man. And I told God before that happened, I says, I don't know. I don't believe in this. I don't understand why the fuck I got to do it. But I understand this. You put it in front of me for a reason, so therefore I'm going to do it. And then that's what that happened. And all this shit came up. And I just started writing. And I started writing, and I committed to a page a day. I got to 11 pages, and all of a sudden just crumbled it up and said, this is not right. I'm doing it wrong. Fuck this. I'm out. And I went to burn it, and something said, go to the club. I came here. I went out there, and Dave Jones was in here, and I said, Dave, how did you do your fourth? And Dave came outside and he says, you know, he had this big old nose, right? And he chewed his gum because he's trying to quit smoking, right? And he says, I just did a biography for him. And, you know, when I got to this time in my life, he told me his deepest, darkest secret. His deepest, darkest secret was my deepest, darkest secret. 30 years apart. If that ain't God talking to you, baby, you don't want to know. You are not willing. You do not want to know what's his will for you. I went back home and I straightened them papers out. And I commenced to write. And 22 pages later, I was done. And Dave, he was another one, told me about that gratitude list you don't hear a whole lot about no more, right? Yeah, Rich, when I got to about 8, I was like, you know, I was good. I was like, I got a lot to be grateful for, right? I'm on my wit's end, man. I'm about ready to explode, right? I think these motherfuckers. So I grabbed that pen, I grabbed that paper, and I start fucking writing and writing and writing and writing. And I get down to 22, right? And I'm thinking, these motherfuckers lied to me, man. And then all of a sudden I said, whoa, wait, shit. Oh, man, Dave, I only had 8. Shit, I got 22, dog, you know. And my perception changed because I was willing to be willing. And that was another thing. Al used to always tell me, you need to be willing to be willing. Years went by and I said, hey, man, what the fuck does that mean? He goes, turn around, he says, I don't give a fuck what you feel, and I don't give a fuck what you think. You do it because you're willing to try it, and you leave the results to God. Okay? When I had 2.5 years, I was walking out of my garage. All I ever wanted to do was be with my father all my life. When I was 16, he got busted for murder. And I couldn't understand why that happened. But because of that, I turned my back on God. I didn't want nothing to do with him. My life got really dark. I walked out the garage. I was doing a welding job, and this thought came through and stopped me dead in my tracks. And it says, if God took away your dad today, would you turn your back on him? And years of memories passed. And I thought, oh, hell no, not today. No. The next day, Robert and I went down to do a fifth step on one of the fourth. And I got a call. And the call was that my dad had been killed and shot and killed the day before. And Robert said, do you want to put this off? I said, no, I can't. I come too far to turn back now. If I don't work this program, Robert, I got nothing. I got to work this program. So we sat and we did it, and we got it done. When I had 23 years, I was going to court for custody. And I used to say, man, did I get sober for this? I spent tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I got sober for this. I'm in and out of court, stressed every day. What's she going to do today? Trying to maintain the innocence of my son? And not being able to? The true powerlessness of being powerless? I remember he wanted an iPhone. I told him, you work for it, you get your grades up, and I'll get you an iPhone. He got his grades to B's. And I remember giving him that iPhone. And I told him, see what hard work can get you? In a second didn't even go by, and I got a knock on the door. And it was somebody serving me papers. I looked at him. I just seen the hope just go. I got sober for this. I had 23 years. And he comes to me and says, Dad, I need my mom. Okay. Still in the midst of the battle. And I need my mom. But I couldn't deny him his mom. I knew that. So I said, okay. But I'm going to tell you, I was fucking pissed. And I tried my best not to show it. But I couldn't. I wasn't very successful. And for about a year and a half went by, and I was fucking pissed. And I went to meetings, and I didn't want to go to meetings. I went to church, but I didn't want to go to church. I prayed on my knees every fucking night, and I told God, I'm not sincere about this shit at all, but I did it. I called my sponsor, but I didn't want to. This is like, so I one day, I met these people that I knew from church, and we went into we met at the mall, and her name is Bobby. She's got a spiritual gift that she can foresee. I don't know if you ever meet somebody like that. It's really amazing. It's unbelievable that some people got this gift. And we sat down, me and her husband, and she said, "Richard, I got a question for you." I go, "Yeah." She goes, "If you were in heaven, would you see your children?" I got a little irritated, but I respected her so much. I said, "Yeah, I would, Bobby. Yeah, I would." And she said, "That's good. It's good." So we got up. She gave me a kiss on the cheek, and we said goodbye. I turned around, and I took 3 steps. And this little voice came and said, "But would they see you, Richard?" And it scared the living shit out of me. Because one more time, in my recovery, I severed my connection to my God with my anger. Again. Not this time. Again. Again. So I go to work the next day. I know I got to do something. I know I got to do something. I'm sitting there. I've got my head's low, man. And I look up. I see the phone. And I call Robert. And I say, "Hey, what's up?" We talked. He said, "Well, call me at night. We'll do some steps." We did. They got me back. My point is that you could be working this program, but you can also be not working this program. Some say that abstinence doesn't necessarily equate to recovery. One thing I can tell you for sure is I don't know your road. I don't know your journey. But I know this, that if you're not drinking, you're not using drugs, you're in recovery. Now, your learning can be real bumpy or it can be real smooth. It all depends on how willing you are to be willing. How honest you're going to be, how open you're going to be, and how willing you must be to do whatever it must take. You see? I've learned so much in here, but that doesn't protect me from the disease, because it's always trying to chase me. It's always hovering over me, looking for the crack, the cranny. It says in the book that self-centeredness and selfishness is the root of our problems. I understand that. I remember in the Hazleton book, when it used to be the 24-hour book, when I read that one, when it says, "One who conquers oneself is greater than one who conquers a city." Oh, man, that hit hard. Because I understand that. Because if you knew what goes through this mind, you would understand the complexity. You see? And I wasn't always one of spirituality. I didn't care about spirituality. I didn't care about those steps. I didn't care about the traditions. When I got in here, I gave up softball because it was something that I used to go out and not go to meetings. So I made a promise to God that I would give up softball. And through some members of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to get involved with Clean and Sober Softball. And Rich here, we used to play many, many years. And he'll tell you, the first time they went in to get in the huddle, I thought we were going to like hit. Yeah, you were defense or whatever. And they started praying. And I went back like that. "Fuck you doing?" "We're praying. We're fucking losing and you're praying?" I went, "Fuck you guys." And I went to third base and I stood there for a long time. And they kept continuing to pray. It may be matter now. "One here to pray a softball, dog. Ain't no spirituality out here, softball." All I knew is win. And if I lost, oh my God, it was bad. For anybody around me too. And then I remember when Al said, "You have to learn to lose." What? I told him, I said, "Al, Show me somebody that likes to lose and I'll show you a fucking loser. Today, somebody may misinterpret my confidence for arrogance. I'm not afraid to fail. As long as I stay sober, it's all good, baby. I'm not afraid to risk. One who risks nothing, risks it all. Think about that. One who risks nothing, risks it all. Okay, that doesn't work. Try another plan. But I'm not afraid to fail. You see? Coming up here and being of service, coming down, you know. My sobriety, again, I want to touch on this because I don't want to lose this. Some of you know, some of you may not know. My brother had 10 and a half years in here. And he went out, and he wasn't able to come back. And the cops shot him 8 times. The worst thing about all that was to see my mother hurt. You know, my mom's a strong woman, man. But I remember when they took me away for armed robbery, she begged that judge, man, to give me another chance. And I remember when the jailers were taking me away and I turned around and I saw my mom. I never saw my mom like that. And I realized what happened. I realized what I had done. But it was too late. When my mom asked my brother and sister, "Why are you here?" And they said, "Richard called." She screamed his name. I remember Daryl calling me that morning. The biggest, darkest nightmare of our lives happened that morning. I pray that I never see my mother hurt like that ever again. One of the gifts that I've been given is that my grandmother was old, and I was able to take her shopping. I was able to pay for her groceries. I was able to pay for her diapers. And I remember one particular time I went to go get her. I said, "Okay, Grandma, let's go." And I remember she saying, "No! Every time you bring me, you rush me. I want to look." Okay. Let her look. So she looked. And then when she was done looking, she come up and says, "Okay, I'm done." So when I got to say goodbye, I said, "Grandma, every time I see you, I feel like this is going to be the last time. I don't think I'm going to see you again. You know I love you, right?" "Yes, mijo. You know I love you too, right?" "Yeah, no." So I was able to lay in bed with her and hold her. And that was the last time I saw her. Gift of sobriety. I was able to say goodbye. My children, two of my children have been my greatest teachers, my daughters. I remember they used to come in these meetings. Sarah would say, "I don't want to go with them dumb old people." "Get in the car, you're coming anyway." So I used to take them. And then my son, to be so close, and now we're not so close. And we were at dinner. Daryl asked me, how's he doing? He calls me Wednesday out of the blue. I haven't talked to him since December. And he goes, hey, Dad. I need my dad. I need you right now. Alcoholics Anonymous is giving me the ability to be there when he needs me. I apply the third tradition to this relationship to my son. And that is, whenever, if ever he want to be a member of my circle, that he be welcome. But to talk to him for 38 minutes, I said, Dad, I just need you right now, and just need you to talk. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have the ability to be available. It's really that simple. Is it all great? No. Will it be? I hope so. What I do till then? Keep walking. And I give like you gave to me. Unconditionally, whenever needed, I give like you did for me. Can't say enough about Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had all this stored up for a long time. I'm scheduled to speak a lot this month. And I'm hoping I got all this out, man. So I could be a shining star in the next one, right? I pray to God that I never lose the realness, okay? I hope to God that I don't ever lose what's real. Because I'm going to tell you what people do know about Richard that know Richard. Richard's straight. Straight arrow. Straight shooter. I don't lie. I don't bullshit you. Straight shooter. What you see is what you get. This is me. Good, bad, or indifferent, this is me. The promises have come true in my life. You know why? Because I've been painstaking. What does that mean? Does that mean doing what you don't want to do? Kinda. But you know what also it really deeply means? It means facing your fears. Because if you don't face your fears, your fears will dominate your life. They'll dictate your future. And where does it all start? It says it in more about alcoholism. When you concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, now you can put your fucking toe on the road of recovery. And until then, you're just on the fucking frontage road, baby. That's it. That's it. And to continue this way of life, one has to give up the thought that I can do this on my own. That has to be smashed. It has to be smashed. I've been years and years asking God, what else do you want from me, man? Huh? What else can I give you? I feel like I'm butt naked in front of you. What else do you fucking want? And one time I was driving, and you know what the answer was? Your pride. Your pride. I want your pride. Pride. One of the other favorite senses I love is in the sixth step, 12 by 12. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. And I refer to the seven deadly sins that it states in the fourth step. Why? Because obsessions of the mind will never be satisfied. I know this. So why can't I just do it on my own because it says in the book as well that we have to give up that idea that we can do it on our own. And that the way to continue this road is to continue working with others. I need to give and give and give like you gave me. I can't say enough about my relationship with Daryl. Daryl's rough sometimes, man. Sometimes he gets me going too. But I'm going to tell you a quick story and I'll start wrapping it up. You know how I found out the four-step worked? I was going to go to a meeting, right? And when I saw this, I was looking for this guy. I was going to me, I was looking, right? And whenever I saw him, I was just going to go up to him and just start beating on his ass, right? That was it. It was no sorry. It was, we're done. I was going to get him, right? And Roger Chalet saw me and he goes, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for so-and-so. He goes, well, I'm going to beat his fucking ass right now. And he goes, hold on, man. Hold on. You ever think about writing about it? And I go, right? About what? So, yeah. He said, well, hold on. Let's stop. I said, yeah, I'm holding on right now until I find this motherfucking ass. And I'm looking. And I'm going to meet his writing. And he goes, well, hold on. So I go, all right. You want to write? All right. What I got to write? So he tells me to write about it, right? So, all right. You call me when you're done. Okay. I go home. I'm fucking running. I'm going to write this motherfucker. You want to write? All right. I'm writing and writing and writing. Hey, Roger. Roger goes, yeah, what's up? I'm done. You're done? I'm done. Well, I'm done. Okay, well, come on over. All right. Go to Roger's house, right? Go back there. We start sharing it, right? We're done. Start walking down the garage. He said, how you feel? I said, man, fuck that motherfucker. I'm tired. I'm going home, man. So a couple years later, Daryl's got the situation. He's going to go kill this bitch, right? And I'm like on the side. I said, oh, God, give me some words. Give me some words. I'll go kill her, too. So I say, God, I'm deep, man. God, help me. God, give me some words. So I go, hey, man, you ever think about writing about it? Daryl goes, write about what? I said, well, man, check this out, man. They got this four-step, man. Why don't we write about it? And then when you're done, we'll go over it and see what happens. And I tell you what, if you still feel like that, I ain't going to stop you. You know, Daryl got that look, right? All right. So he goes home, man. He calls me a little bit. He says, hey, it's Daryl. Hey, what's up? I'm done. You done? I'm done. So, oh, man. All right, let's hook up. So we go hook up, right? Daryl's sharing this shit, right? And I'm looking at him, and I get to, oh, damn. The transformation is just like, you ever seen an animation where it just starts subsiding? I'm looking at this, I said, man, this motherfucking shit works. And I said, fuck. And so he gets done, and I go, all right, how you feel? Ah, fuck that bitch, I'm going home. I'm tired, man. And I'm like, ah, damn, shit fucking works, man. And Daryl thought I was God for the next 3 years, right? And I let him think that shit too, right? And I'm like, babbling, I'm saying, motherfucker, this shit really work in here, man. The steps relieve you of you. They help you get centered. They help you surrender your will to a higher power. 4, 5, 6, and 7 help you look at the bleakness of your character. 8 and 9 help you get right with other people. 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. Why in order? Because what the hell are you going to maintain if you ain't done 931, right? You got nothing. You don't put the roof on first. You got to put the sidewalls. You got to put the cement, right? And how are you going to get right with other people if you ain't right with yourself? And when you start looking at the character, the bleakness of your character, the darkness of your character, God knew you were going to have to look and lean on Him first. The first three steps. And the traditions. The traditions, I'm going to tell y'all, I'm known for another 12-step program. But when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I abide by the traditions. Why? Because there's somebody in here that is looking for the difference, looking for that excuse to give them a reason to go out. And that might be their last chance. Hey, I ain't giving it to you. Not here, baby. You find it someplace else, but you ain't finding shit here. So I abide by the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the traditions are simply tools that create unity, because without unity, none of the others matter at all. They mean nothing without the unity. And this purpose has to be direct and concise, and sole purpose is we can get sober, stay sober. You can find relief from alcoholism. We can't let other issues be involved in our program because we'll all have different opinions, and then you have division. And then there's no unity. It creates unity. It maintains unity. It enhances unity. Because without unity, there is nothing. For a group and as individuals, we will perish for sure. Unity is the key. And that's the guideline right there to maintain the unity for our group. My sobriety. Anything good, anything that I maintain is solely dependent upon my sobriety. Any adversity that I walk through is solely dependent upon my sobriety. For without my sobriety, anything of any importance is going to be of no importance. That I know, without a doubt, because I am an alcoholic and I need you. And I want to take a minute and a moment to say thank you for everything that you've given me. God, for giving me this room. This room means so much to me. You people mean so much to me. You help me get where I'm at. Without you, I'm nothing. I'm Richard G, and I'm out. Thank you.
All right, let's give Richard G another round, huh?